Case of the morning is number 054596, Mary Clark against State Farm Mutual. Mr. Johnson.
May it please the court, Mr. Gerst. This case was originally brought in Indiana State Court as an underinsured action by the plaintiff, now appellant, Mary Clark, on behalf of her two minor children.
See, could we pause there for a moment? Because the caption of this case says Mary Clark, but as you just said, as I understand this case, it's really not Mary Clark attempting to recover for herself. She got her $100,000 out of the earlier payment. Instead, it's really a suit by two different people, the two children, AC and SC, for whom she stands as next friend, right?
Yes, correct.
All right. Here's the problem. This is one of those odd cases where neither child is seeking more than $75,000. One of them is seeking $75,000 on the nose, right? And the other is seeking $25,000.
That's correct, Your Honor.
And yet it's a diversity case, and two different plaintiffs are not normally allowed to aggregate the amount in controversy. If it had been Mary Clark aggregating two claims of her own against the defendant of diverse citizenship, that is permitted under the jurisdictional amount rules. But I'm concerned that this is really, when all is said and done, the two minors appearing as they must through this next friend, and she's aggregating.
I don't see
how you meet the amount in controversy is the bottom line.
I understand, Your Honor. State Farm did move for removal from state court.
That they can't consent to jurisdiction, though, as you know. I mean, perhaps maybe both parties could file a statement with the court addressing this. I don't want to distract you from your entire very brief time on oral argument today, but I at least would appreciate some attention to this, because if it's two separate plaintiffs, AC is plaintiff number one and SC number two, I don't know how you surmount the aggregation rules.
If both parties would submit a memorandum on the jurisdiction of the district court under the diversity statute within 15 days, we'd appreciate it.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay, and we'll, with that asterisk in the background, we can go on to the rest of
okay.
Your argument.
After the case was removed to federal court, summary judgment motions were submitted by both sides, and the district court for the Southern District of Indiana granted State Farm's motion for summary judgment, and this appeal followed. A brief summary of the facts, and we've covered them a little bit already, is Mary Clark and her then-husband and her two minor children were involved in a car accident. The at-fault driver, the tortfeasor, Billy Akers, had an American Family policy with limits of $100,000, $300,000. As a result of negotiations, Mary Clark did receive $100,000, her then-husband received $100,000, and the two minor children received $75,000 and $25,000, respectively.
All right. Now, I have two questions for you. One of them is it not true that the gist of the argument you're making would de facto increase the per accident limit for the family here, the Clark family, from $300,000 to $400,000? Because that's the bottom line of what you're looking for. And the second question is, how is your argument consistent with this recent Indiana appellate decision in the Grange case?
Thank you, Your Honor. I will address those. Your first point, it would be a de facto increase of $300,000, $400,000. Both the core case and every case cited in these briefs say the overall goal of underinsured motorist coverage is to make sure that there is enough coverage as if there was no insurance at all, they would fall back on their own policy, that there would be there.
But their own policy would not have paid them $400,000.
Yes, Your Honor, I agree.
In CORE, I think, well, we don't have to belabor the distinctions with CORE, but I guess that's the real rub. Does this mean only at the per person level somehow, or does it mean sometimes it's at the per accident level?
Your Honor, in CORE, the court recognized that there would be anomalies with their decision. They found it, and I'm going to quote just for a second, less problematic than leaving the victim of the underinsured motorist worse off than the victim of a wholly underinsured motorist. They found that working towards that goal was more the intent of the legislature. And with the decision that they made that today, as we interpret it, there would be anomalies. And, Your Honor, this is an anomaly.
But I don't see how. I mean, if the other driver had no insurance at all, then there would have been a $300,000 cap. So I don't know what in CORE says the intent of the Indiana legislature was to make a person in these people's positions better off because of the lack of insurance.
I agree with you, Your Honor. And I'm clearly here today because we believe that this is an anomaly that they did consider, and they thought that it worth it to have a result like this more than somebody left worse off than if they were hit by somebody that was actually uninsured.
Okay. And what about Grange then? I mean, you run up against Grange,
yes.
Surely,
yes, Your
because
Honor.
There was some question about whether CORE had cast any doubt on the Sanders case, but now you have Grange.
We definitely have Grange, Your Honor. That case came down, I believe, 2 to 3 weeks after the appellant filed their brief in this case, and I wanted to recognize that. Grange is on point, and it is against us. That's pretty much the gist of it.
We have case law indicating that when the law of a state is unclear, when we look at the jurisprudence of the Supreme Court of the state, and there is a decision of the Intermediate Appellate Court on point, that we really need to give that extreme deference. Doesn't the existence of Grange create a significant problem for us, acting as the ventriloquist dummy, as they say, in the Erie, under the Erie Doctrine, to do anything other than to follow a case from the Intermediate Appellate Court in which the ink is really not even dry yet?
Yes, Your Honor. I certainly understand that, and I certainly understand that case is persuasive to this court. But as I don't feel the Supreme Court has ruled on the exact situation here and CORE still in dispute, well, I understand that case is very persuasive for you, and it's a big bar for me. I certainly understand that. I do think because the Supreme Court has not spoken on this exact issue, it's still properly before you, and that case is persuasive, not binding. I see that my time is, I'm getting into my rebuttal time, but I would just like to go into a conclusion that we address this right off the bat. The reason that we have made this is because we believe the law says, due to CORE, that they are able to make this claim. Now, and if this claim is granted, it will make their underinsured cap larger. But if we go the other way, and I want to use, for example, in the CORE case, the CORE family had one child die in this accident. And that's why there's only one UIM claimant, so they could go to the UIM policies. If their CORE family is unfortunate enough to lose two children during that accident, even though they wouldn't even come close to the 300 policy and lose two people and, I'm sorry, get the same award of $57,000, then they would have been denied any sort of coverage at all because now there's multiple UIM claimants. And the Supreme Court's decision says that the legislator wants to avoid that. They want to make sure that they are wholly insured as if they were hit by a person who did not have insurance. I'm sorry. Another anomaly on the side they're trying to avoid is if there's four people in a car and the driver is injured and three others are injured as well, and the policy limits are not enough to compensate them all, the three passengers could go back to their own policies and make a recovery. But that driver couldn't go to his policy and make a recovery on his underinsured because there's four other claimants now in that car, and there are technically four other insureds. Either way, that this issue is solved, there's going to be anomalies. But I believe that the legislature, and I think that's what the Supreme Court said in Core, was if there's going to be anomalies, we want them to fall on the side of making sure everybody has the coverage that they deserve. And again, if this case is to come down that way, it would be an extension of the coverage that they did have, but I believe that was anticipated by the court. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Johnson. We'll hear now from Mr. Girth.
May it please the court, Mr. Johnson. This is an unusual insurance policy case in that there has been no contention by the plaintiff that the two policy provisions relied upon by State Farm are ambiguous in any way. The trial court, Judge Tinder, held, in fact, that both policies were clear and unambiguous and operated to relieve State Farm of any liability under the policy. The argument here is that pursuant to the Core case, these two insurance policy provisions are void as a matter of public policy. The problem with the plaintiff's argument is that the Core case is readily distinguishable from the facts in this case. In Core, we had a single insured under an uninsured or underinsured motorist policy, and we had a number of other occupants of the vehicle who were insured under separate UIM coverage. And we had a liability insurer with a lot of limits, but the problem was a great proportion of those limits were paid to people who were not insured under the Core policy. The court held that in determining whether an underinsured motorist vehicle is present, you have to compare the limits available to the insured as against the underinsured limits of the insured making the claim. That's entirely consistent with the statute that's in issue here. That statute reads in relevant part that an underinsured motor vehicle includes an insured motor vehicle where the limits of coverage available for payment to the insured is less than the limits of the underinsured motorist coverage. So the only real question we have here is, what does the word insured mean as used in the statute? And Judge Tinder, relying upon the prior Indiana Court of Appeals case in Allstate versus Sanders and Medley versus American Economy Insurance, held that when the legislature uses the word insured in the statute, it includes its plural sense as well as its singular sense. So that in the Clark case, we had $300,000 in liability limits available to all four Clarks, all of whom were insured under the State Farm underinsured motorist coverage. Since there was $300,000 available for payment to those four insureds, and because those four insureds had underinsured motorist coverage in the exact same amount, $300,000, the adverse vehicle was not an underinsured motor vehicle. And that is the exact same argument that was followed by Judge Friedlander in his well-reasoned opinion in Grange versus Graham. The Core case specifically did not address this question of the multiple insureds. It cited the Sanders case, which is entirely consistent with our argument and the subsequent Graham case, and said Sanders held that if more than one person is injured in an accident, the tortfeasor's per accident liability limit controls for purpose of determining whether a vehicle is underinsured.
I mean, I suppose it's Sanders. I mean, the question for us, given that this is a diversity case and Indiana law controls, is whether there's any reason to think that the Indiana Supreme Court would disapprove the approach taken in Grange, or is there any reason even to think that they regard it as an open question. Now, they certainly have a discussion of Sanders in the core decision, and it doesn't seem to be a disapproving discussion. I'm not sure. I think that I read it as just kind of, we're going to put this to one side because that's not what we have here.
I think that's an accurate characterization. Right?
And so then the question is, are there hints either in CORE or any other decision from the Indiana Supreme Court that would lead us to think that the judgment in Grange was mistaken somehow as a statement of Indiana law?
I think the clue there is the reason why the court in CORE adopted its rule of comparing per person to per person, and that was its concern that in CORE, the insured was receiving less under the underinsured motorist coverage than the insured would have received had the adverse driver been completely uninsured. That was the court's concern. That concern is not present here. As we point out in our brief, under any scenario here, the Clarks are going to get their entire $300,000 per limits per accident limits, and whether it all comes from the liability insurer of the adverse driver. If the adverse driver had been uninsured, they would have gotten the full $300,000 in underinsured or uninsured motorist coverage. And if the adverse driver had had only 50-100 coverage, they would have had $100,000 from the adverse driver, and they would have had $200,000 under the underinsured motorist coverage, which again brings us to $300,000. If we accept the proposition that the Supreme Court's decision in CORE stands for the proposition that the insured should get the same amount regardless of the insured status of the adverse driver, then the rule that State Farm is urging in this case is absolutely appropriate because they are getting $300,000, they got $300,000, and they would have gotten $300,000 under any other scenario. I do want to save a last remark about a separate provision of the policy that simply was never addressed in CORE and which supports the proposition that State Farm's entitled to summary judgment, and that is the fact that there is a separate provision in the policy that calls for the reduction of the limits to the extent that the insureds receive payment under the liability coverage. There's $300,000 in underinsured motorist coverage. The insureds, all four of them, received $300,000. That reduces the available limits to zero. In Beam versus Wausau Insurance Company, the Indiana Supreme Court, addressing a slightly different issue, held that language providing for the reduction of limits of insurance is valid and enforceable in Indiana. And that was a case in which the issue was reduction of workers' compensation benefits. But there's no suggestion that provision with respect to the tortfeasor's liability limits would not be equally enforceable. And in fact, there are two Indiana Court of Appeals opinions in which the reduction of per accident limits by the payment of tortfeasor's liability have been held to be valid and enforceable. And the CORE case simply is silent on set-off provisions. It wasn't at issue at all in that case. And in fact, the suggestion would be that certainly with respect to the per-person limit, the insureds would have had to reduce their claim to the extent of the $57,000 that they received from the adverse driver. So the point is, not only do we have the question of whether this is an underinsured motor vehicle, but even if the court were to determine it was, the fact of the matter is that there's a separate provision that has been enforced by both the Indiana Court of Appeals and the Indiana Supreme Court, which would also call for the entry of summary judgment in favor of State Farm. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Girth. Mr. Johnson, you have no time, sir. And therefore, the case will be taken under advisement, and our thanks to both counsel.